Hey everyone.
Welcome to the world of Aja Pearl. I'm your host, Aja Pearl. It's my world, and I'm so happy you're here. Today, I will be reading chapter one of my very first book, Chalice, the Book of Life. Now, this is the first book of my Chalice trilogy, and the next book I am working on right now is called Chalice, the Book of Love, and the next will be Chalice, the Book of Forgiveness. And those two are still in the making, but I can assure you it is going to be a page turner. It's going to straighten your hair. It's going to do all sorts of things because it's all sorts of craziness going on. But it's real crazy. Well, it's art imitating life, so to speak. But enough of that. In the meantime, here is chapter one of Chalice, the Book of Life. And chapter one starts with a reading from the book of Isaiah, chapter 58, verse 9, which reads, "Then shalt thou call, and the Lord shall answer. Thou shalt cry, and he shall say, Here I am." "Hello," Zora replies when she answers the phone. "Hi, sweetheart," replies Anton. Anton seems disturbed about something. "Hey, how are you?" Zora asks.
Great.
"Great," Anton answers. "Look, we need to talk." What's wrong? Why do you sound so serious?"
"That's because it is serious."
Zora's heart begins to race. Anton starts, "I just want you to know that I love you, and you mean the world to me."
"Tony,
just tell me what's going on," she says anxiously.
"Okay."
There's a brief pause. Zora exclaims, "Tony!" And Anton takes a deep breath and says, "I'm getting married."
"What? What did you say, Tony? You're getting married? To whom? Do I know her? What do you mean you're getting married?"
"Zora, please calm down, my love. Let me explain."
"Calm down? Calm down? You're breaking up with me. You're telling me that you're marrying some chick behind my back, yet you want me to relax. I don't need an explanation from that. You've been having sex with her behind my back, haven't you? Haven't you?"
"No, no, my sweet, please listen to me. I love you."
"No, no, you're a liar. You never loved me. You never wanted to see her. I never want to see you or hear from you again."
She hangs up the phone and throws it across the room. Zora is furious. She grabs her hair and screams to the top of her lungs. Then she wails loudly, falling to her knees. Her fury turns into heartbreak as the tears begin to fall from her face. Zora lays on the floor in a fetal position. Her tears saturate her face. She sobs and she sobs and she sobs until her head and chest hurt. Zora feels as if she is near death from a broken heart. The physical pain weaves into the emotional pain she feels from the love of her life. A few years ago, Anton, affectionately known as Tony, Anton Praganza, affectionately known as Tony, and Zora Grant met at Holy Chalice Catholic College. It is one of the few four-year colleges in the city that centered on the teachings of theology. The college has harsh guidelines. Besides maintaining a decent grade point average and conducting themselves as dignified ladies and gentlemen, one of the rules is that a student must come from a Catholic or Christian family to enroll in the college. Another rule is a student must come from a family with a mother and father. Blended families and single parent families are accepted if the husband and wife were Catholic or Christian faith and married in the church. If the student comes from a single parent household, the other parent has to be deceased. Third, if a young woman is pregnant, she must be either engaged or married during her duration at Holy Chalice College. Otherwise, they must leave college.
When Zora was a freshman and Anton was a sophomore, during a mixer, they exchanged numbers. Since then, they were like every other quintessential couple. Talking on the phone and going on dates. Since their meeting, their love affair has bloomed until they became inseparable. They pledged their love to each other with passionate kisses and passionate lovemaking. Now it has come to an end. Anton slowly hangs up the phone with his hand over his face. He begins to weep to himself. His heart aches for ending the relationship with the love of his life. He can still hear her anger and betrayal in Zora's words repeatedly echoing in his mind. Zora, I'm sorry. I didn't want to hurt you. I want to be with you. I love you, he thinks to himself. He sits on the couch and weeps for a long time until his father, Mr. Agnello Braganza, finds him in the living room. Anton? Agnello calls out to his son. Anton quickly wipes his face before his father becomes suspicious. Yeah, Daddy? Are you okay? Why are you sitting in the dark? Agnello asks with concern. Nothing, Daddy. I'm just thinking. Ah, you're anticipating meeting your bride, Nataline Pancar, Agnello Braganza assumes as he sits next to Anton and places his arm around his shoulder. Don't you worry, my son. It'll all work out for the best. I don't think so, Daddy, Anton thinks to himself. I love Zora. You and Nataline will live in wedded bliss. With that wedded bliss, lots of children will bless your home. You know, the Pankar family, your mother and I, have been planning this marriage for a long time. I pray that you and Nataline will be as happy as your mother and me. The statement makes Anton hang his head with anxiety and somewhat nausea. If he dares to tell his family that he has no desire to marry Nataline Pankar and that he should have the freedom to marry outside his race and religion. Why should that matter? Love has no bounds. It is clear that Mr. Braganza is more excited than his son. He acts as if he wants to marry... He's the one getting married to Nataline Pankar. Anton wishes he could share his father's happiness and excitement, but all he can think about is a woman he loves, Zora. Anton's mother and father, Mr. and Mrs. Braganza, do not have a problem with their children dating outside their race and culture. However, in their learning, arranged marriages amongst their own were essential. Anton's parents already had a potential wife picked out for him since he was a boy. The young woman is from a well-to-do family from the United Kingdom, from the same culture and practices, the same religion. Therefore, any other girl before the marriage was considered nothing but a short-lived romance. I hope so too, Daddy, Anton replies with a little enthusiasm. I want to tell you so much about Zora, Anton thinks to himself. She's wonderful. She's my real bride. Daddy, Anton starts, did you and Mama get married the same way? Well, was there another woman you loved besides Mama? Well, son, I did have my share of dating and romance. Agnello explains, but I knew my bride was waiting for me. Now this Zora girl, it's excellent that the two of you share a romance. However, you already have a bride, and it is not Zora. It's Nataline. She has already been chosen for you. Anton takes a deep breath. Was I scared to see my bride? Sure, his father continues. I prayed she would be the woman of my dreams, beautiful, intelligent, strong. And when I finally met your mother, I was happy. I knew right then and there that I would give her all my love to her. Wow, Anton thinks to himself. That does not help me much. Come, Agnello says, giving him a pat on the back. Let us join the rest of the family for dinner.
Yes, Daddy.
So the father and son join the rest of the family for dinner. Raquel Braganza, Anton's mother, and Monique Braganza, Anton's younger sister, wait for Anton and Agnello.
Hurry or the food will get cold, Raquel says.
The family sits at the table to have dinner. It is like any other night at the dinner table. They eat and converse about their day. Then the subject of the bride is placed on the table. Our son will be leaving the nest soon to start his own family, Raquel Braganza says. Pretty soon, it'll be Monique's turn. I think you and Monique should stay close to us. Anton looks at his mother. It would be nice for the family to stay together as opposed to living far away. Raquel continues, how else will we spend time with our grandchildren?
Raquel,
Agnello interrupts, once they say I do, we have no say of what they do with their lives.
I can't believe my baby is getting married within a year. When is the engagement party?
May I be excused, please? Anton asks.
What's wrong, dear?
His mother asks.
I'm not feeling well. I need to go lay down.
You may go, Anton, Agnello grants. Anton leaves the table and goes to his room.
May I have the rest of Anton's dinner?
Monique asks. You may have it after you finish your dinner. Understand? Raquel Braganza insists.
Yes, Mama.
What is wrong with that boy? Raquel Braganza wonders.
Oh, he's just a little nervous about meeting Nataline, Agnello replies.
She's a nice girl. Comes from a respectable family, well-educated. What is with that boy?
That is very true, but Raquel, this is a boy who has never been married before, and it is a lifetime commitment.
Yes, it is. Raquel laughs and then replies, Remember when we met for the first time? The married couple laughs.
I don't know about you, but I was so nervous, Raquel replies, giggling.
I was nervous too, but then when I saw you, I was no longer nervous.
When I saw you, I was no longer nervous. You were so beautiful. Everything about you was so beautiful. And it has never changed, Agnello replies as he gently takes his wife's hand.
Agnello, Raquel replies, putting her other hand on top of his hand.
What a beautiful sentiment.
And such crap. Agnello and Raquel laugh. While the rest of the family continue their dinner, Anton lays on his bed looking at the pictures of him and Zora. He comes across one picture of only of her. He gives it a lengthy kiss. He stares at the image for a few seconds and slowly glides his fingers against the photograph of her face as if he is touching her soft, silky skin. Anton then lays on his bed. He reaches for the Walkman and places his Style Council's cassette tape in his tape deck. He plays the song, You're the Best Thing. He turns off the lamp, leaving the room with only the moon's horizontal lights for his lighting. The music plays. His mind begins to drift to the memories they shared, the good and the bad. Each memory flows like a running river. The colors of each memory are so vivid and move in slow motion to capture each moment. In each picture in his mind, he sees Zora with her bright smile and long beaded braids that hung gracefully from her crown to her shoulders. Then he tears up. His tears come back to accompany him in his loneliness.
Raquel and Agnella Braganza met in their birthplace of Goa, India. They were in their early 20s when they got married. Shortly after getting married, they migrated to America. They moved to the United States. The move to the United States was a slow transition. The newlywed couple moved into the apartment of Agnello's friend and his wife. With the help of a local organization for Southeast Asian immigrants and his friend, Agnello gets a job at the same cab company as his friend. The couple soon made enough money to get their own apartment, which is also within their community. The apartment is very modest and small. But Raquel and Agnello were pleased. Soon Raquel became pregnant with Anton. 3 years after Anton's birth, their daughter Monique was born. When the children were old enough to go to school, Raquel went to work as a secretary for the same organization that helped her and her husband when they first came to the city. The organization specialized in helping Southeast Asian immigrants have a smooth transition into the United States. As time passed, the family eventually moved into a 3-bedroom apartment. Lord, Anton silently prays through his tears. Please help me through this heartbreak. I don't know my next move. I don't know if I can go on with my life when he is. I don't know if I can go on with my life when he has imprisoned my heart. When she has imprisoned my heart. What a blow. Zora cries for hours on end. The pain is too much for her to bear. The crying and sobbing seems so exhausting. Therefore, like any other woman in his predicament, she eats everything in sight. Zora seems to pick herself up from the floor. Then she goes to the kitchen to grab whatever junk food she can find in her view. Zora goes into the freezer. She grabs a pint of vanilla ice cream, then goes into the refrigerator and grabs the leftover strawberry icing and caramel syrup. Zora places the combination together and eats it straight from the carton. However, she is not satisfied. The pain is still there. Zora Grant puts on her sneakers, rushes down the stairs to the corner store, and purchases a Philly cheesesteak sandwich. Then she goes to the liquor store to get any alcohol she can get for $10. When she was satisfied, Zora returns to the apartment with her meal. She sits back on the floor with her legs crossed and devours her sandwich and alcohol. Zora is now utterly intoxicated, but Zora does not care, as long as it numbs the pain of her broken heart. The intoxication takes over her body to the point where she falls to the floor facing the ceiling. Her head is continuously spinning. Subconsciously, she knows she's in a downward spiral. This is not a good time to be alone. She needs friends around her, friends who can help her during the time of crisis. She crawls to the phone and calls her best friend, Fabiola Castillo. The phone rings. Zora prays she will pick up the phone. Unfortunately, Fabiola's answering machine picks up the call. Damn it, Fab, Zora cries. Pick up your phone. I need you. Zora hangs up the phone. Who else could she call? Then she decided to call her longtime friend Jabari Montague. The phone rings again. Again, she prays, he will answer the phone. Hello? Answers. Hello? Zora sobs openly. Zora, what happened? What's the matter? He left me, Jabari. Tony left me for another woman. What? Tony left you for another woman? Yeah. Zora cries openly. What the? Okay. Relax, please. Zora, I need you to calm down and relax. Zora stops sobbing for a minute to compose herself. Jabari starts, okay. Now, tell me what happened. Zora grabs some tissue and blows her nose. She begins to explain to Jabari the phone conversation between her and Anton. Are you serious?
I don't believe that. Tony came out and told you he was getting married to someone else? That's an ill move. How could he could at least be a man and told you to your face? I'm so sorry, sweetheart. Are you going to be okay? No. That's why I'm calling you. Okay. Chill. What do you need?
I need for you to come over, please. I can't be here by myself.
Jabari sighs and says, what about Fabiola?
I tried calling her.
But I guess Fab is too preoccupied with school. You know she's serious about her fashion career.
What about Miss January?
She's working late at the hospital tonight. Please come over to my house. Okay. Just give me a minute. I have a few things to take care of and I'll come to your place. Just hang tight and don't do anything stupid. Please?
Okay. Zora replies, wiping her nose.
You promise me?
Yes.
Okay, I'll see you later.
They both hang up the phone.
Jabari Montague scrambles to get his thoughts together. Zora Grant is still on his mind. He has to get to her, so he has to act fast on running his errands. Jabari grabs his jacket and goes out the door. Meanwhile, Zora continues to lay on the floor, but this time she weeps softly to herself. She thinks about all the time she shared with Anton, the memory of the first time they met, the first kiss, the passionate kisses that follow suit, and the memories of their lovemaking playing in their head repeatedly. Then, the final memory, their breakup. Zora sobs and sobs.
I thought she would love me forever, Zora thinks to herself as the tears roll down her face. I thought we'd be together forever.
Although she still is heartbroken by Anton Braganza, Zora knows she will have some comfort in the company besides an empty liquor bottle. It is comforting to know that Jabari will be there. However, she waits for a long time for Jabari. She begins to realize that maybe Jabari, one of her best friends, bails out on her too. Just when she loses hope, about 2 hours later, someone rings the doorbell. Zora Grant drunkenly gets up to answer it. She staggers to the door in a drunken stupor. She looks through her peephole and saw it was Jabari.
What took your ass so long, man?
Zora scolds Jabari.
Come on, Zizi, open the door. I shouldn't let you in, but I need you.
Zora sobs, struggling to open the door. Zora finally opens the door. Jabari cannot believe his eyes. She is a mess. Her hair is messy, her eyes are red, her face is wet, and she reeks of alcohol.
Oh, damn, Jabari says softly.
When Zora is about to cry again, he hugs her as she sobs openly on his shoulder.
Okay, Zizi, I need you to pull yourself together for a minute, Jabari advises.
Jabari does not want to create a scene in the hallway, so he escorts her back into her apartment. Jabari takes the liberty of locking the door behind him as he escorts his heartbroken friend to the sofa. He cannot believe Zora's living room floor is covered with trash, but Jabari can sit Zora down on the couch.
Girl, you are a mess,
Jabari says, shaking his head in shame.
Sit here while I get you a glass of water.
As he heads to the kitchen, Jabari asks her, I'm going to the kitchen to get you a glass of water. Are you sure you're going to be okay for a few seconds? Zora nods her head. Jabari takes off his leather jacket and places it on a recliner in case Zora vomits spontaneously. After getting the water, Jabari sits next to his friend. He watches her slowly drink the glass of water. Her hand quivers as she raises the glass with every sip.
Feel a little better? He asks with concern.
Yeah. Zizi, he starts shaking his head. I cannot believe this is happening. Again, I'm so sorry. It may feel like it, but the Lord will guide you to your real soulmate. I guess you're right. Zora thinks he's full of crap. Her heart longs for Anton Braganza. However, deep down, she knows he is telling the truth. Did he try to call you back? No. It's clear that Anton never loved me, Zora concluded, as the tears run down her face. That's why he's marrying another woman. They talk, she sobs, he comforts her. This sequence goes on all night. Then Zora places her head on his shoulder. She becomes exhausted from crying. He holds Zora like a baby in his arms. Wow. This is nice. So comforting. Zora thinks to herself, nestled in Jabari's chest. He smells so good. I can stay in his arms forever. She smiles to herself, and she falls so at peace. Zora thinks to herself, I could listen to his heartbeat. Even the rhythm of his heartbeat is soothing. Baby, never let me go. Let me stay in your arms. Then it dawns on her. No, what am I doing? This is my best friend Jabari. I can't get vulnerable like this. Zora springs out of his arms. What's wrong? Jabari asks. Zora has to think of something. I have to go to the bathroom, Zora says. She goes to the bathroom and closes the door. She turns on the water and splashes water on her face. She slowly raises her head to look at herself in the mirror. Wow, Zora says to herself. I do look like a mess. Most of all, I almost let myself fall victim to my vulnerability. Zora puts her head down and thinks aloud. I am a mess. I'm about to give myself to another man. Not just any man, my best friend. I have to get him out of here before I do something stupid. She grabs one of the towels to dry her face. Before going back into the living room, Zora takes a deep breath, looks at herself in the mirror, and one last time, she goes back into the living room. Meanwhile, Jabari sits patiently in the living room. Is everything okay? Jabari asks his friend with concern. Yeah, everything is cool. Are you sure? You look like you are on edge. Oh no, I'm fine. I think I'll be all right for the rest of the night. Jabari sighs. He feels that he needs to be with her, but he has to take her word. Well, if you feel that way, fine. I'm still going to go check on you. Okay. Thanks for coming by, Jabari. I greatly appreciate it. Don't sweat it. Remember what I said. You'll be all right. It's okay to mourn over the relationship, but don't get stuck in mourning. I won't. Jabari grabs his jacket. Zora walks him to the door. I'll call you as soon as I get home. Okay. Again, thanks for coming to see me. No problem. He parts walking towards the elevator. After locking the door, Zora places her hands over her mouth and pushes her hair back. What a day. First, her longtime love breaks up with her, and then she gets vulnerable with her longtime best friend. She abruptly cleans the litter off the living room floor. There is still some alcohol in her system, which causes her head to spin again. Zora falls on the couch. After a few more minutes, she picks herself up to take a shower. Zora lets the water rain on her body. Zora is in the shower for a long time.
After a long pulsating shower, she finally goes to bed. All she wants to do is sleep the entire evening. How bizarre. However, she eventually goes to sleep. About 2 weeks later, Mother Superior Wakefield goes into the office to start the day with her morning announcement. Unlike every other day, this announcement was different. Mother Wakefield turns on the intercom with a heavy heart. "Good morning, everyone," Mother Superior Wakefield begins. "This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it." She pauses to take a deep breath. Then Mother Superior Wakefield continues. "It is with great regret and a heavy heart to announce the passing of our dear friend and loving brother, Nevin Lorimer Nareed. Nevin Nareed attended our school as a boy and has been our longtime member of our parish. He came back to our parish to provide his services by keeping our beloved church immaculate daily. Now, the Lord has called him home, where he will no longer suffer. There will be further information about the time and place of the wake and funeral. Until further notice, I advise you to keep Nevin's friends and family in your hearts. May God love you all and have a good day." There was a mixed reaction to the news. Some gasp, some are crying, the others talk amongst themselves about the unbelievable news. "Oh no," Sister Mary Hoyt says to herself. "Poor Nevin." Then Sister Mary Astor descends into the main hall for her morning coffee and almond Danish. She notices that her fellow sister, Sister Mary Hoyt, is distraught about something. "Sister," begins Sister Mary Astor as she gently touches Sister Mary Hoyt's shoulder. Sister Mary Astor abruptly holds Sister Mary Hoyt's hand. "Oh, sister, it's terrible, just terrible." "I know. It's a great loss for everyone. But you have to believe that Nevin is resting in the bosom of the Lord, and he is no longer in pain." Sister Mary Hoyt takes a deep breath to compose herself. "Sister Astor, I don't understand," she says, shaking her head and trying to understand the situation. "Why did he not come to me for help? He always came to me for help whenever he was in trouble."
"I don't know, sister," replies Sister Mary Astor.
"Maybe his demons overpowered him to the point that he could not ask for help from anyone. The only two people who knew the answer to that question are the only two people who knew the answer to that question are Nevin and God." The statement takes the nun back to a memory years ago. Holy Chalice was an elementary school at the time, and Sister Mary Hoyt finds a young Nevin sitting by himself.
"I guess so, sister," Sister Mary Hoyt starts as she looks towards the stage. "In fact, I can vividly remember one demon that was troubling him. I saw him sitting right at that very spot with his legs crossed. He looked like he was staring into space."
"Nevin," I asked as I sat next to him, "why are you not outside playing with the other children?" He turned and looked at me for a few seconds and went back staring into space. I knew something was troubling him, but I didn't know what. I just wanted him to tell me what was wrong, or at least talk to me. "Nevin, dear, can get into a lot of trouble for not being present at recess," I explained. I received nothing but a blink from his eyes. That was when I said, "Very well, Mr. Nareed, maybe the Mother Superior will have better luck talking to you." I got up and went. And when I was about to walk to Mother Superior Wakefield's office, I heard, "Can I ask you something?"
He I turned to him and said, "Yes, Nevin?" "Have you ever been afraid of doing something you loved wholeheartedly?" I gave him a puzzled look. I was not expecting him to ask me a question like that. So I said, "What do you mean, dear?" I can tell he was unsure of continuing with this query, but Nevin went on anyway. I like to sing, he said softly. "What did you say?" "I like to sing," Nevin said, looking at me straight in the eye. "Really?" "Yes, sister. You know, we have a school choir, and anyone is welcome to join." "Yeah, I know, but what, Nevin? My parents may not allow me to join the choir." "Well, why is that?" He sucked his teeth with frustration. Then Nevin said, "They think school activities are a waste of time and they think my grades will get worse." "They? Who's they, Nevin?" "My parents." "That's ridiculous. Why would your parents think of such a thing?" "I don't know." "Well, what difference does it make? My parents will never let me join the choir. You know, every time the choir performs, I want to be part of it so badly. When I sing the songs to myself, I don't know." My eyes start to water. With that statement, Sister Hoyt paused for a moment. Then Sister Hoyt asked him with a simple question. "Nevin, how does singing make you feel?" "Happy," Nevin said with a smile. "Singing makes me happy." "But sister, if singing makes me happy, why do I cry?" I smiled at him and said, "You're singing from your heart. Do what makes you happy, my child. Never hide your light under a bushel. Let your light shine for the whole world to see." "But what about don't worry about your mom and dad? I will talk to them." It wasn't easy talking to them. After the first call on the phone, Nevin's parents did their best to avoid me. They were like brick walls. They would not budge for anything, especially for their child's happiness, Sister Mary Hoyt explained, shaking their head. I called practically every day. Mr. and Mrs. Nareed felt so upset with the constant calls, they threatened to report me to Mother Superior Wakefield on me. But the Lord was good. I happened to catch Mrs. Nareed sitting in the office. "Mrs. Nareed, please hear me out," I started. "Sister," Mrs. Nareed interrupted, getting up from her seat. "With all due respect, you have been a thorn in my side about Nevin and this singing business. But this has gone far enough. I am reporting you to the superior and then you'll be sorry." Okay, Mrs. Nareed. "I don't mean to be a pest, but I care about your son's happiness. I see him on the school grounds and he's a loner. He has told me that singing makes him happy. Don't you want him to be happy?" "Of course, I want him to be happy. But education is our strictest rule, and so it should be. But there should also be some balance." Mrs. Nareed said nothing. She just looked at me sternly. "Here's an idea," I started. "If you and your husband allow Nevin to join the school choir, I will keep a close eye on his performance in school, and I will never bother you again." With a stern look, Mrs. Nareed replied, "I will discuss this with Nevin's father." And she walked out of the office. "Oh, my," Sister Mary Astor says, "that was a close call." "Indeed, sister. However, I kept my word to Nevin's parents. He sang in the choir, and his grades were always up to par." "Did his parents ever come to see him perform?" "No," Sister Hoyt replied sadly, patting her eye with a tissue. "However, being able to sing made Nevin happy, and that make me happy. After class, Isaac goes to a payphone to give his girlfriend a call. He thinks it would be a great idea to have a casual dinner date. As he dials the number, he prays she answers the phone. Most of all, Isaac prays she'll be available. Fabiola Castillo and Isaac Gonzalez have been together since their senior year in high school. They attended the same co-ed Catholic school. They attended the same co-ed Catholic school. Fabiola came from a large, hardworking family. She had lots of brothers and sisters, and her parents ran a local bodega in a neighborhood. Isaac, however, is the only child and lives with his mother, who is a nurse. Unfortunately, he neither knows nor encountered his biological father. As their high school graduation approaches, Isaac thought his girlfriend would be attending Holy Chalice Catholic College with him. Still, Fabiola dropped the bombshell. She had been accepted to the prestigious Elihu J. Walton College of Design, but she wanted to attend that school instead of Holy Chalice Catholic College. All right, let me read that again. As their high school graduation approaches, Isaac thought his girlfriend would be attending Holy Chalice Catholic College with him. But Fabiola dropped the bombshell. She has been accepted to the prestigious Elihu J. Walton College of Design. And she wanted to attend that school instead of Holy Chalice College. She loves Isaac, but she also wants to pursue her dream as a fashion designer. Isaac was disappointed, but at least Fabiola's college was located within the city. After graduation, they spent the summer together. They promised each other that no matter what happens, nothing will jeopardize their relationship. After the summer end, it was time for the couple to go to their respective colleges. Since the school year started, Fabiola has been more occupied with her studies than Isaac. It's not her fault. EJW is a prestigious school for the arts, and it only chooses the best of the best. The phone rings. "Come on, Fab," Isaac says, waiting for an answer. "Answer the phone." "Hello," Fabiola finally answers. "Hey, Fab, it's Isaac," Isaac says happily. "Isaac, baby, what's up? I want to take my fabulous Fab out to dinner." "Ooh, that sounds great, but I can't see you tonight." "Why not? Don't tell me it's another project." "No, it's a test." "Oh, well, I'll tell you what. We can have our romantic dinner at your dorm, and I can help you study for your test." "Okay, baby. My roommate is working late tonight anyway." "Great. I'll meet you in your dorm at 6 p.m. "Then it's a date. I love you." "I love you too, Fab." They both hang up the phone. Isaac is very excited about his date. It has been months since they have spent a quality time together. That evening, Isaac comes bearing his Chinese takeout and a bouquet of multicolored roses, Fabiola's favorite. Isaac carries a flower bouquet like he is bringing a rainbow of royal blues, fuchsias, whites, reds, yellows, corals, pinks, and two-tones. Isaac has to pass security, sign in the visitor log, and show his state ID before Isaac can reach his lady love. After that grueling process, he rushes to catch the elevator and finds it just in time. Catches it just in time. When the elevator door opens to the fourth floor, Isaac walks to Fabiola's door. His heart beats faster with each step. When he finally arrives at the door, Isaac positions his food and flowers to have a free hand. Meanwhile, Fabiola can hear the tussle of plastic coming from outside her door. She looks to see who is making that noise on the other side of the door. Peekaboo, Fabiola says, I see you. Fabiola opens the door. Hey, Fab, baby. Hola, mi amor. They embrace enough with a passionate kiss. Here's some flowers and some Chinese food for my baby. Aw, baby, you spoil me. No, baby, you spoil me. Baby, I miss you.
I miss you too. I want to see you so badly, but these professors will not let up with all these assignments, she replies, placing the gifts on the table.
I know, baby. The same thing with me, Isaac Gonzalez empathizes. Now I have to study for this stupid test, she says, sadly plopping on her beanbag chair. Hey, I'm here to help you. We'll get through this. But first, you need some food in your belly. Okay, I'll get our plates. Fabiola has difficulty getting up from the beanbag chair, but her boyfriend pulls her up from the beanbag chair. Thanks, mi amor. She takes the food into the kitchen and puts it together to place it. She takes the food to the kitchen and puts it together, two plates and two glasses of Pepsi. Fabiola walks from the kitchen, bringing the two plates of food. She then places them on the table. Baby, let's eat here on the floor like it's a picnic. I'll get one of your blankets. I want to be closer to you. Okay, Fabiola says with a smile. When she walks back into the kitchen, a thought occurs to her. Oh, the mixtape. Okay, I'll get that too. You stay here, Isaac insists. They both scramble to get their dinner date together. Isaac goes into the room to retrieve the mixtape in one of her blankets. He runs back into the living room, places the mixtape into the tape deck, and turns up the volume. Then she goes back into the kitchen to get the two glasses of Pepsi. Finally, she joins Isaac in the living room for dinner. They talk and eat. Isaac and Fabiola have a wonderful time together. Have you seen Zizi? Fabiola asks. Yeah. Zizi's been feeling depressed, confused, and betrayed. I thought they had a strong relationship. Of course, I saw Tony. I gave him a piece of my mind. Actually, I gave him half my mind. I mean, dumping your girlfriend over the phone? Then you tell Zora you're marrying another woman? No bueno. Then he told me the reason he broke up with Zizi. Well, we all know the reason. He's marrying another woman. Yes, but you do not know the reason Anton is marrying another woman. Oh, this should be good. What lie did Anton tell you? Anton told me that in his culture, arranged marriages are a tradition.
What?
Yeah.
Anton is marrying another woman due to tradition.
Are you serious?
Yeah, Fab.
So he has been misleading poor Zora all this time?
I asked him that question, but Tony said that he sincerely loves Zora.
Love? He still loves Zora?
Yeah.
Anton feels so bad about the situation that he begins to cry.
He feels like he hurt Zora, but he hurt us because we love Zora too.
I don't know, Fab.
He told me about their engagement party next month. He said it was an open invitation and we're all welcome. I told him, now think about it.
Isaac Gonzalez was bewildered about the news, so he puts his issues aside and focuses on his quality time with Fabiola. He turns her head softly and gently caresses her chin.
Fab, let's just focus on you. Focus on us,
he says with another kiss.
Focus on tonight.
You're right, mi cielo. I am so happy you're here.
They exchange a passionate kiss.
Are we done with dinner?
Fabiola asks Isaac seductively.
Yes, I am,
Isaac answered seductively.
Good, because I need to hit these books so I can pass this test, she says, leaping off the blanket and taking the two plates into the kitchen.
Isaac was disappointed. He wants to help his girlfriend study, but he wants to be intimate with his girlfriend.
She brings her book and notebook out from her bedroom and sits on the floor with Isaac. After putting the plates into the kitchen, she goes into her bedroom.
She brings her notebook and book out of her bedroom and sits on the floor with Isaac.
Fabiola opens her books and proceeds to study for her upcoming test.
No, he thinks to himself, I cannot do this to Fabiola. She wants me to help her to study. I guess I'm not getting that fortune cookie tonight.
It starts as a regular study session. Isaac reads to her each section and then quizzes her after each chapter. It is getting late and Fabiola cannot stop yawning.
Baby, let's call it a night. I'm tired, she says with heavy eyes.
Okay, mi vida.
Isaac agrees. I'm going to jump into the shower.
Okay, while you do that, I'll clean up.
Thanks, mi amor.
She replies with a kiss on his lips.
So Fabiola gets up to get ready for her shower. As he watches his girlfriend walk off into the bathroom, he cannot help watching her luscious body sway to and fro.
Qué rico, mi Fabiola, he thinks to himself with a half smile. Before he goes into the bedroom, she turns and blows Isaac a... Hold on. Before she goes to the bathroom, she turns and blows Isaac a kiss. He pretends that the kiss is flying into the air, catches the kiss, and eats the kiss seductively like a piece of fruit. It makes her blush, and she shyly...
and she shyly goes to the bathroom and proceeds to clean up the living room while Fabiola prepares to cleanse her body. When he finishes, he can still hear the water running from the shower. Isaac is drawn to the shower, the sound of the water, as if it's calling to him to come. He cannot resist the sound. Isaac is under its spell. He walks towards the bathroom door, licking his lips. Isaac then slowly opens the door. The bathroom is hot and steamy. He quietly closes the door behind him and stands in front of the shower. Isaac slightly bites his bottom lip because he knows who's behind that shower curtain.